Okay, so here we go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Radio Flash, Armada's Military Electromagnetic Spectrum podcast, with your host Tom Withington at the controls. Never before has the electromagnetic spectrum been so congested, and this is only likely to get worse. Ericsson predicted the world would have 1 billion 5G subscribers by early 2023. This could grow to 5 billion by 2028. As the ether gets more saturated, the bad guys potentially have more places to hide their signals of interest. Moreover, new techniques like artificial intelligence are coming to the fore to help the electronic warfare expert find that signal in the noise. These realities have to be addressed by training, and joining us today to help make sense of them is Taf Willemsen, Head of Training and Cyber Electromagnetic Activities at MASS. He joins us today all the way from Lincoln. Taf, welcome to Radio Flash.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everyone.
Well, it's good to have you with us. And let's get stuck in and just start by talking writ large. To what extent do you feel NATO Land Forces EW training is fit for purpose at the moment?
I think it's pretty much publicised out there that NATO train collaboratively across all domains. So if we look at the land, air and maritime, there are some huge exercises that go on. You know, they're in the public domain. People can go and look those up. Predominantly, though, for sort of platform protection. So that fast air and maritime. So the land forces tend to be overlooked a little bit, is my experience. But down in Oberammergau, you know, there are, down at the NATO school, there are a lot of training courses where guys and girls from all over different NATO countries can go and get together and learn these specific areas. But the training that's being conducted, although you could say it's fit for purpose, there is an issue, obviously, that the ability for military personnel to update that training is very difficult because, number one, we time and operational tempo. And also, technology is moving that quickly that you could almost be constantly updating training. So we have to go back to first principles quite often and stick with that sort of foundation piece. Obviously, as you said, you know, it's becoming more congested and contested, and the target sets are getting more complex. So looking at whether or not the training is fit for purpose, I think there are a good basis, but there is room for improvement. But that can come down also to SQEP, so suitably qualified and experienced personnel, because you have to remember that for the last two decades, at least, we've been in sort of Afghanistan, Iraq, and looking at that asymmetric threat as opposed to the what we would class as, old school EW.
That leads me quite nicely into my next question, which, from your perspective, so far as things stand today, what are we doing well? And I suppose, more importantly, what do we need to be doing better?
A very good question. I think individual services, and you know, I talk to a lot of customers across NATO and further, but individual services, so Air Force, Navy, Army, etc. I think they do a lot of their own training internally, but there's this thrust to want to be working not just joint, but also coalition. We're starting to see, certainly a trend towards that joint working, information sharing, information advantage and information dominance is the name of the game nowadays, to get around that OODA loop quicker than our adversary. One of our taglines here is that we help turn your data into operational advantage, and that's key. It's making sure that the right data or intelligence products get to the right person at the right time. So accurate, assured and timely, et cetera. So what we're looking at here really from that joint perspective is the ability for all services and all personnel to reach into that single golden view, if you like, of what the EMS should look like, what we would have looked at as an electronic order of battle that you would expect to see in front of you when doing that planning and deployment piece. And allowing for, instead of individual services to be carrying out the same operations almost simultaneously next to each other, but not sharing, almost blinkered and, you know, stovepipes, should we say, it's to give that common operating picture and that understanding of that situational awareness at all levels of what's left, what's right, what's above and what's below. I think, as you said, you know, the EW threat has evolved so much that we're certainly, you know, witnessing a need for personnel to understand not just platform protection, but force protection and area protection is key to all that. An aircraft can't take off if you don't have the force protection and the area protection of that particular AOR, for example.
So if I could have a magic wand and make money, time and resources no object at the end of the day, what would you be doing to change EW training across NATO, let's say, and allied nations as well?
Let me tackle that in two different parts, covering short-term and long-term, if I can, Tom. So immediate impact, resource. You know, I think across all forces in NATO and beyond, resources is always an issue. And technical depth of the training as well. As we've said, technology is moving at such a pace, you know, that it's trying to keep up with that as it moves. And every time that's, you know, a new piece of technical equipment is manufactured, there's a countermeasure that comes out against that, and then there's a countermeasure that comes out against that. So it's trying to keep on top of this, you know, this almost like the old space race. It's this technical race to keep ahead. A lot of countries have downsized their militaries. We've seen that over, you know, the past few decades. The UK is no different to everybody else. You know, we've seen the size of our militaries depleted. So we're having to do more with less. We're having to do just enough, just in time. We're having to train for now, you know, as opposed to training for the future necessarily. And some of it is knee-jerk, sort of reactive as opposed to proactive, and trying to get that training in place prior to almost all eventualities. We tend to be concentrating on the here and now. So resource is key. And as I said previously, you know, it comes back to that SQEP, that suitably qualified and an experienced person that can sit there with 30 years of experience and pass that on to the you know, the younger generation. Again, we're sort of going back to almost that Cold War footing. And yet we're very well versed in asymmetric threats. We're very well versed in, you know, in that sort of desert environment and so on, and fighting in built up areas. But actually going back to what we used to excel at in the 80s, 90s, and so on is a difficult one. When we look at within training, hands on training is key to this. So certainly here at MASS, as you well know, you've looked at some of our equipment. We've spent a lot of time and money developing and designing electronic warfare and SEMA simulators so that we can actually expedite that knowledge transfer. Because again, what we're seeing is that when we look at some of the constraints that we're under, it's not just money and budgetary with regards to money, but it's the operational tempo is such that it's a budgetary constraint on time. So whereas we used to be able to, you know, release personnel for 16, 18, 20 weeks of training, we now have to try and hit those same training objectives in much shorter periods of time. How do we do that? Through virtual training, through simulation and emulation and hands-on kinesthetic muscle memory. You know, so that the operators can actually go out into the operational environment and already have a good understanding of what they're likely to come up against. Longer term, so digital literacy is key. Certainly, you know, now with the cyber electromagnetic activity or SEMA, this is a huge focus. We're starting to see that RF and IP layer blur in that convergence with modern sort of personal communications and social media, et cetera, et cetera. You mentioned 5G there. You know, this is a big problem for the community, in so much as how do you chase that specific target set, you know, through that sort of 5G and so on. So a lot more complex threats, a lot more technical. So we need to encourage that digital literacy, I think, personally, at school level, at that year 7 and 8, because we, you know, if we're looking at long term, perhaps in 7 or 8 years' time, we need those young guys and girls to come through with an understanding of cyber and certainly the, you know, the EMS and how it all fits together. So we've got to invest in those STEM subjects of science, you know, technology, engineering, mathematics, and grow from that younger age. And I think that's, you know, every country should be investing in that. Certainly there's a big, huge push in the UK. I know my wife actually teaches computer science, and there is a big push to teach children from that year seven, and especially to teach females, because there seems to be a lack of females in that environment. That won't just help us keep a pace with the evolution of technology, but it supports recruitment efforts in years to come, whether that's industry or within the military.
Sadly, as we both know, we always have constraints on resources, on time, on money at the end of the day. So taking those factors into account that you were just discussing, what do we need to prioritise within those if we're only able perhaps to pursue a few of them because of the restraints we have?
Well, we mentioned, you know, some of those key challenges are resource, the operational tempo, meaning that we have less time to do more training. We tend to find now that those that are in a job continue to do that job and therefore don't have time to go and train. It's, you know, they're training on the job, let's say. So but what that doesn't allow you to do is upskill your personnel to give you that capability uplift. So, you know, resource is a huge problem. The working environment as well is becoming more technological, as we mentioned. So as technology comes in, I'm 52 years old, Tom. My 11-year-old is all over technology compared to myself. And that's why, you know, we've got a real reliance on some of these younger sort of graduates and postgraduates that are coming through that have got much more knowledge about this technical space than we ever will have. But also we have to understand that, you know, they're not as necessarily military motivated as we were. So there's a balance there to be struck. And certainly within this complex environment, we need clever, you know, clever people doing very difficult tasks against complex target sets.
Just to finish off, I understand that you're going to be attending this year's Association of Old Crows EW Europe event in Bonn. People can come and meet you yourself and meet your colleagues as well. And we were talking just before we started recording the podcast, you're going to be bringing your EW simulator with you to that, I understand.
Yes, so we'll have our Thurban database management system with us. We'll also have our BattleEye mission management tool, electronic warfare mission support tool. And we'll also be bringing Newts, which are our networked EW training simulator, so people can come along, have a look at that, see how that fits into our training offerings and how that can expedite that knowledge transfer.
Taff, that's great. It's always good to catch up. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for your time.
And if you'd like to learn more about MASS's electronic warfare training, then you can head to their website at mass.co.uk. And don't forget, there's more electronic warfare and military communications news and analysis available at armadainternational.com. And that's all we've got time for. Thanks for listening.